And I'm going to make Linda Chow a co-host. Okay, are you ready, Linda?
Yep.
Okay, all right, good morning, everyone. It's 9:03 a.m., December 15, 2021. This is the last day of the hearings of this phase of the contested case proceeding in the East Maui Water Revocable Permits for 2021 and 2022. Good morning. Let's see, just a couple of points here. We did try doing a transcript last evening off of the audio tape, and it worked out pretty well. So we'll send that to you, and then we'll try to do the rest of them shortly and get them out to you. I think it'll be helpful for reference. And so today are the closing arguments of the parties. You're going to have a half an hour each, up to a half an hour each, and the A and B EMI will go first, then the County of Maui, and then the Sierra Club. And there's no there is a public viewing room today. There's no one there. And anybody have any questions before we start? Okay, if not, A and B, you want to go ahead?
Yes, this is David Schulmeister for EMI and A and B. So I'd just like to start by commenting briefly that, you know, what's at issue here is the renewal or the extension of the revocable permits through the end of 2022, not some later long-term disposition. And the standard for that is what's in the best interest of the state. And based on what's transpired in this hearing to date, it's pretty clear that the Sierra Club has conceded that the renewal of the RPs is in the best interest of the state. Because they're no longer advocating the argument that the RP should be allowed to lapse. And instead, they've been focusing just on seeking modified additional conditions, modified conditions, et cetera. So the issues in this contested case have also been appropriately limited. And you know, the reason is to afford Sierra Club the due process that it has, demanded and that the judge has essentially ordered to provide evidence of new facts. Now, Sierra Club has not actually offered much, if anything, in the way of new facts. Sierra Club has instead recycled and reasserted the same facts that have already been extensively litigated previously, both in front of the Water Commission and in front of Judge Crabtree. And they're trying to package them into new arguments about what the board's policy judgments should be, you know, when they do their balancing. So what these policy judgments should be regarding imposing new conditions on the RPs through calendar year 2022. So that is not, those are not new facts. These are just, you know, repeated arguments, and their policy arguments, they're not facts. EMI's position on all this will be comprehensively set forth in our proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. But for purposes of this closing, I will comment on some of what the Sierra Club has presented and argued, beginning with you know, I would consider this a sort of a aggregated issue pertaining to system losses versus waste versus, you know, conditions to require system upgrades or to increase pumping from groundwater. This is all one interrelated issue and concern, which Sierra Club again, there's no new facts on this. This is just a, they're continuing to argue what they've argued before, which is that, you know, the system losses from seepage and evaporation are too high, that efforts should be made to better account for and reduce it. And, you know, the fact that it goes into the aquifer is somehow irrelevant, and that and the aquifer should be pumped. All of these are arguments that were dealt with by CWRM. The 2018 DNO went over in fairly granular detail the accounting for system losses that was presented by HCNS. And the system losses from seepage and evaporation, which I went over and I identified the paragraphs in the DNO when I cross-examined Wayne Tanaka. I mean, there was a calculation that was done that was based on surface area as far as evaporation is concerned, and wetted area as far as seepage was concerned. The rates of seepage through the different materials, whether it be concrete lined or earthen, et cetera, those were got from the National Engineering Handbook. There was evidence, you know, put in the DNO about that. It was recounted in the findings. And the end result was that the commission determined that the 22.7% of water diverted that was not otherwise accounted for fell well within the range of expected system losses from seepage and evaporation based on these calculations. And now, during the testimony of Mr. Tanaka, and he essentially conceded this, but then he quickly said, well, but we don't really agree that even the 22.7% should be allowed in the future. So in other words, Sierra Club is trying to relitigate the question and essentially challenge what the Water Commission already determined on this. And then during the redirect on Mr. Tanaka, Mr. Frankel, you know, then tried to argue from the CWRM decision that there was no, that it's one thing for it to be 22.7%, but that rate should also apply to Mahipono while they're in the process of transitioning using a very small amount of water compared to what was previously used. And, you know, not taking into account the fact that obviously you're gonna have a higher incremental rate of seepage and evaporation if you're just using a small amount of water. And he says, well, but there's nothing in the CWRM decision that said that that was okay during a transition period. But in fact, the CWRM decision did discuss the then current state of the transition to diversified ag in on page 187, paragraph 709, you know, and the you know, there's a discussion there of exactly what EMI was then diverting, which was approximately 20 million gallons per day, and 6 to 8 MGD is described as used for the county of Maui, and for the ag part in the county of Maui, and 1 MGD for cattle operations, 2 MGD for bioenergy, and 6 MGD for maintenance of reservoirs for fire protection, and then seepage loss of 4 million gallons per day. So there was, in fact, in front of CWRM at the time, evidence that unlike the situation during sugar, when you had over 100 million gallons, well over 100 million gallons per day being diverted, and under that scale of diversion, the expected seepage loss was about 22.7%. But it was also in front of CWRM during the hearing what was happening at the time of the hearing, which was 20 MGD was being diverted. And nowhere in the CWRM decision do they try to say, oh, we're gonna take this 22.7% for full build out And we're going to apply that back to the 20 MGG that you're currently using, which is broken out in paragraph 709. So it's really not correct that CWRM didn't consider it. And it's certainly not correct that CWRM intended the 22.7% to apply to anything other than full build out. And so I just wanted to make that point. Now, Mr. Tonk admitted during his cross-examination that it just simply stands to reason as a matter of engineering and the laws of physics that if you greatly reduce the total diversion amount, you're necessarily going to cause the percentage of that is going to be lost to seepage and evaporation to be greater. And this is even though the absolute amount of the seepage and evaporation is considerably less. So for example, during sugar, the amount of seepage loss or of system loss was over 40 million gallons per day. And basically what Mr. Tanaka said, yeah, that's totally unacceptable. 40 something million gallons per day are unacceptable. And yet that's exactly what CWRM said was within industry standards and was reasonable during sugar cultivation. So basically Sierra Club is not only re-arguing what was previously argued, but they're also criticizing the conclusions that CWRM made, which is inappropriate in this proceeding. So there's nothing new here on this system loss issue. There's no surprises. How the system loss occurs, where it occurs, this was all looked at, you know, in granular detail previously. All right, so, and this is also argued from Judge Crabtree. And so again, I'm just, you know, there's nothing new here. Now, the staff submittal for the RP renewal, you know, says the same thing. And as, you know, in terms of where we are now, you know, as Mr. Howe testified, Mahipono is moving forward with upgrades and operational improvements that are completely consistent with the learning curve that, you know, they necessarily need to navigate here. I mean, it would make no sense for the board to now, after what CWRM has already decided, what the judge has already decided, and in the context of just continuing a permit through the end of 2022, to suddenly, you know, peremptorily impose short-term requirements for extensive infrastructure upgrades between now and the end of 2022. I mean, whether the reservoirs are even going to be used in the future is still under review. As Mr. Howe says, reliance upon them may be reduced. Obviously, it makes no sense to start, you know, what could be a more than 1 year process of applying for permits to line and cover them, you know, if some of these reservoirs may end up being decommissioned. Sierra Club's own witness, Mike Keto, totally gets that and was very sensible in his comments. And I think Sierra Club could perhaps learn something if they were to listen to their own witness. So the same can be said for increased pumping. I mean, currently, the Central Maui Aquifer, which is a public trust resource, is being benefited by any amounts that are being that are seeping into the aquifer. And at the same time that this is going on during this transition period, the IIFS set by CWRM are being more than complied with. In other words, on a daily basis, I mean, there is more than 100 million gallons a day of water being restored to the streams compared to what was going on during sugar. So, whatever seepage and evaporation is occurring, as an absolute number, it's less than what occurred under sugar. And in the meantime, you've got more than 100 million gallons of water being restored to the streams during this transition period. So the environment is not being hurt. This is more than what CWRM ordered to be restored because we are in this transition period. So the tide is coming in for the streams in East Maui. It's not going out. There's no alarm bells going off. The current trajectory is positive for the environment. There's no Red Hill type of disaster going on here that the board has to suddenly take action upon. There's just nothing like that happening here. So there is no need to impose any new or different conditions in the RPs pertaining to system losses or increased reliance on pumping of groundwater. Now, the second issue I wanted to comment on is just a general issue of water made available to the county at Camole Weir. Again, we have heard no new facts. And this was covered in the decision and order. There's a discussion about what county uses, where it uses it, the amounts that are made available, et cetera. So there's nothing new here. Now, but you know, again, what Sierra Club is doing is they're really using this contested case hearing to just re-argue policy judgments and balancing issues. It's not new facts. It's just recycling arguments, you know, making the arguments, same arguments they've made before. And the arguments themselves, you know, apart from the fact they've been made before and haven't succeeded, they don't have any persuasive force to them whatsoever. Basically, the Sierra Club just fails to take into account how the water comes into Camole Weir and is taken by the county. They argue it as if there's some sort of, you know, allocation or segregation of the water to the county that the EMI does, when in fact, what happens, and is very evident from the photograph of Camole Weir that was put in, that was discussed by Tony Lindner, you know, the water is in Wailoa Ditch. The ditch just transitions into the Weir. So in that picture, you're looking at the Wailoa Ditch, you know, and it all comes in together. And what EMI has to do, as explained by Mr. Vaught in his testimony, is to plan on how much water is going to be coming in. And this is just Camole Weir now. There's also the issue of other ditches, but the county issue is only related to the Wailoa Ditch and Camole Weir. So it all comes in commingled. This is water that needs to be able to, number one, satisfy EMI's contractual obligation to make the water available to the county. And number two, have enough water there so that Mahipono can have enough left over, because the county takes first, you know, as is evident from that picture, you know, the county has, there's a gate that goes to the inlet, to the treatment plant, and the county controls that gate, not EMI. I mean, they control the valve. So as Mr. Lindner explained, it's not, EMI is not making, is not sending water to the county. All what EMI is doing is just making sure that at Camole Weir there's enough water that the obligations to the county can be satisfied, and it's up to the county to then actually, you know, operate the valve to take as much water as they're going to use. As Mr. Lindner explained, it is impossible to dial down, you know, the deliveries on any given day on a day-to-day basis. I mean, this is a huge system. You know, you make a decision in the field and it takes at least 24 hours or more for the effects to show up somewhere else. And so this is not the kind, it's not like Judge Crabtree pointed out, it's not like a power plant where there's a master panel and console where you can just press buttons and move millions of gallons of water instantaneously miles across Maui, you know, just by the press of a button. It doesn't work that way. Sierra Club has not offered anything to the contrary. They haven't, I mean, they tried to suggest, well, if the county and Mark Vaught would just work together a little better, you know, they could probably dial this down so that every day you could have just the amount of water that the county needs. That's not practical. It doesn't make sense. This is nothing new. Opportunities to argue this existed before. The arguments have been made before. There's no reason for anything different now in terms of conditions to the RP. Next general subject, stream restoration. And this is a combination, I'm combining here both the question of restoring flow and also, you know, modifying diversions. Again, I mean, this is not an IIFS proceeding. And I think that it's important to keep that in mind. These are clearly Water Commission issues. And At this point, unlike was the situation during the trial that we had in front of Judge Crabtree, Sierra Club has a pending petition now to amend the interim insurance flow standards. I don't know if you remember this, but one of the main arguments we had made in that trial, both before the trial and during the trial, was, you know, the litigating the in-stream flow standards in front of either the court or the board is not the right place. That is CWRM's responsibility. Now, back then, they resisted that. And they tried to say, well, you know, board, you know, has its own independent public trustee duties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, well, the board should petition CWRM. And we shouldn't have to petition CWRM. But for 20 years, the Sierra Club members knew about the CWRM proceeding. Some of them testified in the proceeding. They voluntarily elected not to be involved. Now they've added a new member who was also involved for Nomoku. And, you know, I mean, what was going on during trial was Sierra Club was walking this line saying, well, we're not challenging anything that CWRM did. We're not criticizing what CWRM did. And yet now they're at the point where they're being a little bit more explicit. Well, actually they are, because Lynn Scott says, well, she doesn't 100% agree with what CWRM did. And we have Wayne Tanaka now testifying that, well, the 22.7%, even during Sugar, that shouldn't have been permitted. 22, that's too high. So even if CWRM calculated the reasonable beneficial use, the gross irrigation demand, to include the 22.7%. And now Sierra Club is arguing, well, that you shouldn't do that. And so presumably in their current IIFS petition, they're gonna be arguing to CWRM, yeah, you shouldn't do that. So they are challenging it. You know, and I mean they're changing their position. And basically it's forum shopping. I mean, they started by going to court in a trial and to go to Judge Crabtree, and he's not the one who should decide IFS. They've argued in front of the board, and now they're going back to CWRM, which is what they avoided doing in the first place. So whenever they don't get the result they want, then they just try to argue it to somebody else. But the proper place for this to be decided is before CWRM. So currently on the RPs, there is no reason for the board to suddenly now modify what it's doing to preemptively get in the middle of what CWRM is going to do. Now the CWRM proceeding apparently is not likely to be completed before the end of 2022. Sierra Club, based on past practice, will then probably request the contested case hearing to protract it further. So as far as the RPs are concerned on the issue of stream restoration, I mean, the staff submittal is still the best available information. There really is no new information put in. There was an attempt to have Mr. Keto testify as if there was new information, but there really wasn't any new facts. I mean, he admitted that there weren't new facts here. He was just saying that to the extent that the staff submittal relied on the IFSAR from CWRM, that he didn't agree that its conclusions had been proven based on the information cited. And he's talking about the habitat modeling. But then he also admitted that he doesn't have better information. So the habitat modeling, until all this other survey data is either done or analyzed, so the habitat modeling and the points relied upon in the IFSAR, that's the best available information. Well, as a public trustee, you know, that's what you're supposed to make your decisions on, best available information. So until there's something different, it's still the best available information. And it appears clear that there will not be better information in time for the board to consider it, in terms of whether or not to continue the RPs through the end of 2022. So there's no reason to modify the permits conditions to do with stream restoration. That's not gonna be the last word on the subject anyway. So the CWRM process should be allowed to play out. BLNR fulfilled its duty by listening and considering what was submitted And that is, continues to be the best available information. General subject of invasive species. Again, no new evidence or information. Same arguments made at trial, although they did not make that a focus of the trial, but they put that in their complaint and they argued about it. The environmental impact statement has detailed studies and comments about invasive species. This, you know, putting more conditions into the RPs to deal with this. I mean, it's not, the issue is really not ripe for being addressed in the context of an RP that's going through the end of 2022. And another thing to keep in mind is when you look at the arguments and what they tried to argue with regard to invasive species, which is primarily the mosquitoes, I mean, their argument was that additional stream flow is going to reduce the breeding grounds for the mosquitoes. But that is exactly what interim in-stream flow standards are addressing. Stream flow. So again, it just is an argument that just goes right back into trying to get the board to second guess or put itself in some sort of, you know, adversary position with the Water Commission. The Water Commission has determined what the in-stream flows should be. And now Sierra Club is asking to revisit that. That has its own track and will unfold as it does. So for purposes of invasive species, there's really nothing new here. And to the extent that what they're saying is that this counsels against having more stream flow, well, that's the issue that SeaWorm is going to address. It's also, I think, important to keep in mind that, you know, I mean, apart from a very general statement, you know, the Sierra Club is only is saying, well, why don't we just, you know, add amounts to the rent to require a bunch of money to be paid by Mahipono to deal with invasive species, but without a plan. And this is this is not how you promote agriculture by, you know, Mahipono has come in and, you know, I think that one of the things that was very gratifying to hear actually in the hearing was Mike Keto talk about how impressed he was with Mahipono and what a good thing it is for Maui and what a good thing it is for the state. And the Constitution requires the board to promote diversified agriculture on important ag lands. You do not promote something by saddling somebody for no reason with undefined costs, you know, as if it's their job now to erase all impacts of invasive species that have occurred in the watershed for 100 years. That's going to be the condition for promoting agriculture in Central Maui. That does not make any sense. So just a couple final remarks here, and if I have any time left, I'd like to, after this, just reserve it. The board as public trustee needs to balance competing interests and goals. So the board has to weigh all the input it has received and strike a sensible balance with regard to the conditions to be imposed on these temporary RPs. The staff submittal, which was very well done, and the action taken by the board did exactly that. It was sensible. Sierra Club's arguments for more and more stringent conditions are not sensible. And this is born from the Sierra Club's bias, which is to disregard the constitutional requirement to promote the maximum beneficial use of water by the public and to promote diversified agriculture in the state's important ag lands. Now, Mr. Tanaka, when he's on the stand, he could not bring himself to say that the Sierra Club supports the return of agriculture to Central Maui. I was shocked. I mean, even Mr. Frankel pays lip service that they're not opposed to that. But Mr. Tanaka could not bring himself to say that they support the return of agriculture to Central Maui. This, more than anything else, you know, very clearly establishes the Sierra Club's lack of credibility as an advocate for the balancing of competing interests. They have no interest in balancing competing interests. They won't even admit that you know, the return of diversified agriculture to Central Mojave is a good thing. And because they put themselves in this position of advocating for just one end of the spectrum and not being willing to acknowledge and engage in discussion about the balancing this required, the trade-offs required, then we get these just absurd hyperboles. For example, Mr. Franco's glass of water. And Mr. Tanaka saying, well, if the water is coming from streams in East Maui, there's a different standard for waste than if it comes from somewhere else. So if water is coming from East Maui, as opposed to from somewhere else that, you know, they don't have the streams or whatever, then, you know, the standard of waste is different. So, and this kind of is reminiscent of what Sierra Club earlier argued about the use of stream water from East Maui to flush toilets at the HCND plant near Puhinene. I mean, to listen to Sierra Club, for every glass of water, you know, whether or not it's being wasted or not depends on where it came from. And if that's true, then are we going to, you know, put tint in the water so that, like, when water goes to upcountry Maui, the users in upcountry Maui will know, well, this much of the water came from East Maui, so we can only use it for this, we can't use it for that. There are not different standards for waste and beneficial use based on where the water came from. That's crazy. I mean, and totally impossible to implement. But that's what happens when. Have my 30 minutes expired yet? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I think you may be on mute if you said something.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, you are about up. I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't give you a warning time.
Well, that's fine. Then I will. I have nothing further to add at this time.
Okay. Thank you. All right. It's 9:35. Mr. Rowe.
Thank you. I'm not going to use my full time, so I'll be pretty brief. As the chair knows, the county relies on the water from these license areas that are the subject of this hearing that flow through the Wailoa Ditch to the Kamole Weir treatment plant to serve over 35,000 residents of upcountry Maui, as well as many acres of agricultural land at the Kula Ag Park. And the county appreciates that the Sierra Club supports the county's water needs and has quantified it at 5 million gallons a day. And when you kind of just look at the average use at the Kamole Weir Treatment Plant and the Kula Ag Park on a monthly or yearly basis, that would suggest that this is a sufficient amount of water. But when you look at the fluctuating needs of the county on a daily basis, the board will be able to see why the county needs greater flexibility than that in order to meet its daily operational needs. As we have shown, the county often relies on additional water being available at the Kamole Weir facility to supplement the other surface water collected for our other treatment plants and to fill the reservoirs at those treatment plants to act as a cushion against low flow and dry conditions. Indeed, as indicated by the exhibit submitted by the county and by the Sierra Club, there were several days when combined daily use at the Kamole facility, when added to the average monthly use at the Kula Ag Park, did surpass 5 million gallons a day. And I believe we specified what exhibits we were relying on in our reply brief to indicate that. This was especially true in June of this year, in the days and weeks leading up to declaration of a stage one water shortage for upcountry Maui. That commenced on July 2nd of 2021 and lasted for almost 4 months before it was ended on October 22nd after a heavy rain event, which refilled the county's reservoirs. The county's witness, Tony Linder, also testified that there are operational reasons for allowing the county to continue to have access to 6.5 million gallons a day, which is the amount that East Maui irrigation does make available to the county on a daily basis. These relate to both pressurization, because a certain level of water in the Wailoa Ditch at the Kamole Weir Forebay is needed in order for the water to be able to enter the intake into the treatment plan and flowed downward into it. And he also mentioned that there are sedimentation concerns if the flow is too low and the, you know, the material that's collected at the bottom of the forebay gets sucked into the intake. And so, again, while the county might not always use the full 6.5 million gallons a day, it does continue to flow through the EMI system down to the plantation where it can be used in other productive ways. And so for these reasons, the county would ask that the hearings officer grant these revocable permits, and in doing so, provide enough water for EMI to continue to allow them to make the 6.5 million gallons a day available to the county on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, it is 9:38, Mr. Frankel.
Can you give me a couple minutes to bathroom break and transition here?
All right.
Thank you. All right. We set?
Okay, it's 9:40.
Thank you. True story. David Schulmeister brought it up. Once upon a time, there was a state agency that resisted having a contested case hearing. The agency believed the claims and promises made by the regulated entity. It didn't ask hard questions. The Sierra Club fought to have the contested case hearing and to ask the questions. And then the Navy's tanks polluted our water. That situation is similar to the one we face here, where the Sierra Club has asked for a contested case hearing so it could ask hard questions to ensure that our environment is protected. It's also similar to the situation that Seaworm faced in resisting the pleas of the MOCU for a contested case hearing for years. In the end, the MOCU deserves so much credit for fighting for decades to restore water to so many East Maui streams. And frankly, so do you, Chair Case and the Commission. You deserve a lot of praise for restoring a lot of water to streams in so many East Maui streams. But that good work doesn't mean that everything is perfect. Even the greatest of our heroes have flaws. Even they make mistakes, and we should be honest about that. The greatest heroes and scientists recognize their mistakes and make amends, kind of like Dr. Strout did in his testimony at this hearing. So what are some of the things we learned? I'm not gonna have time to go over everything we learned in this hearing, but I want to highlight a few things today. I want to first talk about our streams. The streams, the dozen Huelo streams that were not part of the Seaworm proceeding, need more water. Dr. Strout now agrees. That is new information that A and B refuses to listen to, refuse to hear. That is new information. The water needs to be restored for native aquatic life, for recreation, and for riparian uses. People actually live on these streams and depend on that water. And when there's insufficient water, they have to truck it in. Now, we have suggested to you, I believe this is in our responsive brief, three courses of action that could be taken. Restore water to all the water for the streams, or don't allow diversions below Wailoa Ditch, which the county depends on, or make sure all the streams have 64% of their base flow. We believe the board has the authority to do that. We also aren't complete idiots. We recognize that you don't want to use that authority. We recognize that you believe only the Water Commission can do that. We don't agree with that, but we understand your position. In lieu of any kind of protection, though, we are asking, and we'll make it very specific in our proposed findings of fact conclusions of law, that you maintain the cap of 25 million gallons a day until the Water Commission rules on the petition. It is not appropriate to increase diversions before there is a resolution regarding the ecological and recreational value of these streams, before the riparian uses are understood. That cap needs to be there to ensure that further degradation of the streams does not occur. And frankly, the record is uncontroverted that if more water is taken from these streams, it'll cause more harm. Dr. Strauch testified that yes, these streams need more water. It would be wrong to allow A and B, and when I say A and B, I'm using that term inclusively to include EMI and Mahipono. It would be wrong to let them take more water until the Water Commission decides. Now, what about this cap? First of all, we know that it has not been a problem. Since the court imposed on July 31st, there's both Mark Vaught and Grant Nakama testified it has not posed a problem to Mahipono. There's no evidence that A and B, and I use that term again in a broad sense, and I'll continue to use it in a broad sense. There's no evidence that A and B provided that there would be a problem, and it is their burden of proof. And we know that it will not be a problem because Mahipono has claimed, it's insisted that it is getting more and more efficient. And if its claims are true, it cannot argue that a cap will burden them in any way. Even with that cap, there is room for agriculture to grow in 2022. They can irrigate more, they can grow, they can cultivate more acreage with that cap. Maybe not quite as much as they want to, but again, they should not be insisting on more water from these streams until the Water Commission has an opportunity to render a decision on the Sierra Coast petition to set real in-stream flow standards for those dozen streams in Hawaii. And recall, Grant, and we'll cite this to you specifically in our proposed findings of fact, Grant Nakama testified under oath in August 2020 that a cap would have a devastating impact on Mahipono. And frankly, he also testified there has been no such impact. So you can impose or maintain the cap without causing any problems. In this contested case, it is Alexander and Baldwin that has had the burden to prove its water needs. Let's look at those quote water needs. One category is the category that they label historic and industrial uses. Those uses require 1.1 million gallons a day every month. But as we learn from Grant Nakama, there's no data that supports that figure. There's no basis to it. They have pledged to be transparent with you, Chair Case. There's no transparency. When they put this 1.1 million gallon a day figure, there's no transparency. Clearly, the figure has no validity when there's no change, no matter how many days of the month there are in a month or the weather. And we now know that several of those uses listed in there do not use stream water daily or even monthly. HC and D and HC and S have it for fire suppression needs potentially at some point. That's not a daily or monthly use. Maui Demolition, which was listed in that category, uses water from Nāwāhiha. HC and D is no longer using 250,000 and 300 gallons a day, yet that's not reflected in their information. Chair Case, there's no basis for them asking for this 1.1 million gallons a day. Some of those uses, the Sierra Club will acknowledge, are probably good things, but they have the burden to tell you, to tell us how much water those folks need. You cannot give them a blank check. They have failed to do that. Now, if they want to have another hearing in a few months where they ask to increase that the water you provide to those maybe noble enterprises and get enough water, great. But let them, they've had multiple opportunities. We've insisted that they fulfill their burden. We've let them know this was going to be an issue, and they haven't fulfilled their burden. A second use is firefighting. Listen, we acknowledge that's an important use, but there's not a justification for millions of gallons per day. You asked specifically for A and B to provide a determination of what the firefighting needs were, and they failed to do that. A reservoir that contains 450,000 gallons of water, and when I use the word contain, I mean that in all senses of the word. It contains that water, not lets it all leak out, but a reservoir or maybe multiple reservoirs that contain 450,000 gallons of water per day makes sense for public safety. We provide you the math for that in our proposed findings of fact. But there's no evidence, and again, Alexander Baldwin has a burden, there's no evidence that 450,000 gallons of water are needed daily, let alone millions of gallons daily, to pour into reservoirs to fight fires. They have not met their burden. We don't want to mess with public safety, but they have had years to provide the data. They are raising the bloody shirt of fires to justify wasting water. Again, we want to make sure there's enough water to fight fires, but that shouldn't be used as a cover for waste or loss of water. Next use, dust control. If you do the math, and we'll do it for you in our findings of fact, they need, A and B needs between 48,000 and 100,000 gallons of water per day. That's all. Irrigation. In our findings of fact, it's probably too detailed to go through it here. We will provide seven examples in which A and B has exaggerated what they need. Frankly, there is no justification for allowing Mahipono to use more water in its fields that depend on East Maui water than for its fields that use Nāwāhiha water. There are some differences in the crops, but not a significant difference. And if there is, and they don't have enough water, then they may have to change their crop mix. But that's so that we can protect streams because they are important. Mahipono refused to produce the assumptions, models, data, or experts who drew the conclusions of how much water they needed. That's not appropriate. Those are unsubstantiated claims. Again, Mahipono will be able to expand its agricultural cultivation in 2022 with a cap. It may not be able to expand them as rapidly and as extensively as they would like, but they shouldn't until they know how much water needs to be left in the streams in Hualu. Why would they want to risk more of their money on crops which may not be able to be irrigated in the future? It doesn't make sense. Again, the operations can expand, but maybe not as much as they would like. Another category of use that they have proposed is what they call a cushion, or as CEO Hao testified, a buffer. The Hawaii Supreme Court has made it very clear that when allocating water, you can't have these buffers. And we will cite that for you in our conclusions of law. I believe Linda Chow is very well familiar with that. So they can't have this buffer. The next category is reservoirs. Let me be clear. It really doesn't matter from a legal perspective whether we look, whether we label the water that's been going into those reservoirs as wasted or lost. Either way, it's been too much. You know, it's funny. David Schulmeister just pointed to you to paragraph 709 of the Water Commission's order. And if you look at it, the Water Commission said the current total amount of water diverted is 20 million gallons a day. The amount of seepage loss is 4 million gallons a day. If you do the math, it's a rate. 20 million gallons times 5 is 100. So that's going to give you a percentage. 4 million gallons a day seepage loss times 5 is 20. So back then, the seepage loss was 20%. But in this case, the data that's been provided, this is new information for that wasn't provided to a court before. There's a long history now from 2020 and 2021. In some months, as much as 70% of the water was either, quote, wasted or lost. In most months, 50%. Again, we don't care if you call it waste or loss. It is too much. It is not appropriate. We understand. Your inclination is to believe what Alexander and Baldwin says. And that inclination is similar to the health department's inclination to believe the Navy. And we're asking you to please look at the data carefully. More water flowed into the reservoirs than the total capacity of all those reservoirs. The math says the capacity is 350 million gallons. CEO House says actually it's probably less than that because of safety concerns. And yet more than 500 million gallons was flowing into these reservoirs per month, sometimes 600 million gallons. That's crazy. That means all that water is lost or seeps. Now, A and B justifies it saying it went into the aquifer. Those are claims it likes to make. Again, Alexander and Baldwin has the burden of proof. They have provided no evidence, not one bit, that the seepage in 2020 and 2021, not the seepage from 20 years ago, but that water that's going in now, A, actually flows into the aquifer, and B, more importantly, stays there. Aaron Straub pointed out, it's more like a sieve. And I think you, as a member of the Water Commission chair case, I'm sure you know this. Aquifers are leaky vessels. It's not like a contained cement cistern where the water stays there. Water moves. It's not as if that water there is there for future use. In any case, it was Alexander and Baldwin's burden to provide a hydrologist if that's the claim they wanted to make. Instead, they make an unsubstantiated claim. Oh, it's all okay. It seeps into the ground in this future use. But even Kaleo Manuel with the Water Commission said, no, that's not something that's acceptable. You don't drain streams to take water that may or may not be flowing into an aquifer. It's just not right. In any case, Mahipono has told you that they plan on putting less water in their reservoirs in the future. And that's a good thing. Clearly, they do not need as much water going into these reservoirs. So we are going to suggest to you a few conditions. Number one, we're going to ask that you limit the amount of water going into this category at 5 million gallons a day. That's, if they take 25 million gallons a day, that's a 20% loss. That's a little less than 22.7. But again, see how I promised you that their system is getting much more efficient, that they're, and that they hope to use much less water in their reservoirs. So let's hold them to it. Let's give them an incentive to make their system much more efficient. So that's number one condition. Second condition, we're going to ask you to ask them to line one reservoir, just one. And we're going to specifically identify the reservoirs that A, receive groundwater. So there's a long-term benefit. Let's say for some reason that none of us can really imagine, the board decides, you know what, in the future, Mahipona, you're not getting any water. Well, at least then they have a lined reservoir into which groundwater can be pumped. So it's not like that money is going to be wasted. It's not a foolish investment. And we're also going to suggest that this reservoir be one of the larger ones. That way, the amount of water lost will be less. Another condition we're going to ask is that they use the one reservoir that's lined. A and B has the burden of proof. They have provided no evidence that it would be impractical for this to be done. Now, if it takes, if you, we will provide language to you that allows, if for some reason the government delays permitting, that there be an extension of time for lining the reservoir. But they should use the one reservoir that's lined, that's available for many fields, and they should line one reservoir. Now, A and B has the burden to prove that the mitigation measures are impractical, that it's too expensive. They have failed to provide you that information. We even asked them about the information, they didn't know. They failed to meet their burden of proof. But here's what we do know. They've spent $30 million planting, or more than $30 million planting citrus, according to Mr. Howell. If they can spend that much money for a crop they don't know that they're gonna get water for, they can spend a little bit of money lining one reservoir. They can also contribute to invasive species control and forest management. And as a landlord, you have the legal authority to require that kind of contribution. You can ask that they contribute 5 or 10 cents per 1,000 gallons they take, so the Division of Forestry and Wildlife can do an even better job fighting invasive species and managing our native forest. There is a need for that. Here's a bit of new information. Mahipono pays, according to their EIS, their final EIS, 4.8 cents per 1,000 gallons of water. Farmers who use water from my holy ditch pay 58 cents per 1,000 gallons. That's 10 times more. If Mahipono's cost for water double, because it has to provide more water to, more money to fight invasive species, and if they triple because they have to line one reservoir, they will still be paying less money for water than its competitors who are using water from Waiholi Ditch. It is not impractical, it is not a burden to have A and B contribute this money or spend that money. They have failed to produce any evidence to refute what they admit in their own EIS. So you can do this without harming them. Like Namoku, the Sierra Club has no financial incentive to be involved in this contested case hearing. Lucien Dene could have spent her time hiking. Lynn Scott could have spent her time in her Kalaloi. Wayne Tanaka could have been fishing. I could have had better things to do. It is A and B, Mahipono and EMI, who have a financial incentive to take as much water as possible, to provide BLNR with as little information as possible and resist all requirements. The Sierra Club is here to help you do a better job of protecting the public trust. We're not here to give you a hard time for hard time's sake. We want to have resources protected like you do. And we have been able to get new information out of this contested case hearing that has not been available before. And I'll highlight again, Aaron Strauch believes that more water should be going into those Hoello streams. And we will cite to you over and over and over again where he said that. And Mahipono's cost of water is so low that it can't afford to pay for additional mitigation measures, including fighting invasive species and lining one reservoir. And Mahipono will not suffer with a cap. Agriculture can still grow. More acres can be cultivated, but maybe not as quickly as Mahipono wants, while irrigation efficiency measures are put in place.
Mr. Frankel, can I just ask you again, you seem to be arguing now that Mahipono should not get more water than the 25 million gallons a day cap until CWRM acts as makes a final decision on the Sierra Club's new petition for IIFS on Hoello. You're nodding?
Yes, that's correct.
That's my question.
Yeah, I think that we, I feel like we wrote that in a responsive brief. So I don't, but maybe you haven't had a chance to look at that. But we have made this argument before, and that is what we're proposing in our findings of fact, conclusions of law. Again, as I mentioned earlier, our preference would be for the board to make specific measures to protect these streams. We recognize that you are uncomfortable with that, that you feel it's not within your jurisdiction. We disagree with that. So in lieu of actual measures to protect these streams, which Dr. Strauch agrees need to have more water in, and which everyone who all the evidence suggests, that in lieu of that, there should be a cap so things don't get worse. Is that clear? Okay. So in conclusion, this case is about Alexander Baldwin's failure to meet its burden of proof. It's about real answers to hard questions, not unsubstantiated claims. It is about bias towards protection rather than the unquestioning belief in assertions made by corporations whose primary motivation is profit and whose assertions are fairly easily undercut with questioning. This case is about water from streams that is not used. It's about sensible mitigation measures, alternatives, and conditions, which we will lay out with specificity in our proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So that brings us to a close of this part of the proceeding. And so the next step is you all are doing your proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law due next Wednesday. You had made a suggestion that we revisit our timeline after Friday's hearing on the trial. I think we'll just reconnoiter on that after that proceeding.
Let me suggest, I know you have a lot of other things going on. Maybe the attorneys can all talk about it after the hearing. I don't know if you want to participate in that whole conversation. But yeah, I think we should talk after Friday. And then I guess I'm sort of curious about the timing after our proposed findings of fact, conclusion of law are provided to you. What your thinking is about the next steps beyond that?
I don't think we've maybe Linda Chow can comment, but I don't think we have sorted that out yet. I'm going to turn off the recording because we're at the end of the briefing. And then Linda, I don't know if you have any further comments.